Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to episode 97 of Growth Marketing Today. I'm your host, Ramley John. Now, whenever I talk to growth leaders about their onboarding and on how they onboard new users to the product, I'm always fascinated by how often the term aha moment comes up. They constantly say that they want their users to get to their product's aha moment, the interaction that fills their user with a feeling of delight and reveals the true value of the product to them. Now, according to Vivek, the head of growth at Wave, your job of onboarding new users doesn't end when they experience that first aha moment, but what he calls the first activation event, or FAE for short. I'm getting ahead of myself. In this episode, Vivek actually shares that precise user activation framework that helped Wave get acquired by H&R Block for $537 million earlier this year. In episode 99, you'll learn, first, why is the aha moment, the first one, not enough to determine if a user has activated? Second, how the Wave team designed the onboarding experience. And third, why managing up is an important skill for growth teams to have to succeed. Before we jump in, I just want to share with you that I've actually created a free growth cheat sheet with all the actionable tips from this episode in a one-page PDF. You can get that user activation framework that Vivek talks about and get it on a PDF. Why take notes about this podcast episode when you can just steal mine? Go to growthtoday.fm/99 to get it now. You can also find this link in the description of this show. Before we jump in, I just want to thank those who made this episode possible. Now, these folks helped cover the cost of hosting and marketing tools so I can focus on getting amazing experts that you and I can learn from. I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. They are a RevOps and demand generation shop. You can check them out at 42.agency/GMT. That's FourtyTwo.agency/GMT for a free consultation. And you can also find that link in the description of the show. And if you're interested about getting an ad-free version of this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/growthtoday to sponsor this podcast for as little as $2 per episode. Well, enough about me. Let's jump in my chat with Vivek. Hey, everybody. I'm so excited to finally get Vivek. He is the head of a director of growth at Wave. You know, I've been trying to get him. I know. Super busy guy. How's it going, Vivek? How are things with you this morning?
Ramley, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I know I haven't been as reactive as I should have been. But yeah, thank you. It's my pleasure to be on your show. And it's a great show. You've got some of my favorite people on the show. And I'm a listener myself. And you know, you're doing a great job there. So thank you for having me here, and it's my pleasure.
I really do appreciate you. We've chatted a few times already before recording this. I'm really excited. You have so much to talk about. I'm like, every time we talk, I learn something new about growth from you. Before we jump right in, you know, I for my listeners who might not know, you've been working at Wave. What is Wave? Can you like give like an elevator pitch of what Wave does?
Yeah, I mean, I would be more than happy to advocate for Wave. So Wave is a fintech company. It's a technology company. Consider Wave as the financial system of record for, say, small businesses. When I say small businesses, like super small businesses, micro businesses, like under 10 employees, which is a huge, huge market in the States and also here in Canada. So it allows, like Wave allows our small business owners do their accounting, invoicing, actually even get paid on invoicing through our Wave payments rails. And also, Wave Payroll takes care of their payroll. We just launched a fantastic product, which is just, there's so much heat in the market for that, which is a more like a banking product, not really a banking. It's a debit card. It's a card for small business owners. It's very interesting because the world has enough and more cards. That the idea is not to launch another card that small business owners can get confused with. The idea is to you use the Wave Money card. You're gonna have the entire workflow automated. You use the card for, say, in Starbucks, say you are buying inventory or paying up an invoice or whatever, right? That expense just get directly goes into and get categorized in your accounting. And that already makes yourself tax ready. So imagine you having not to lift your finger, and this whole process gets automated. So yeah, we are super excited overall. And that's Wave. And we got acquired. I don't know if you know this. I'm sure you know it, but we got acquired by H&R Block, one of the largest exits here in Canada last year. And we are a product-led company. Like, you know, that's one of the reasons why I'm at Wave. Very, very, very product-driven company. Huge distribution potential. Amazing critical mass. Something like I would say similar to, you know, not exactly similar, but like along the lines of Shopify critical mass. It's a very exciting place for people to do product-led things.
Now, I noticed prior to Wave, you actually worked at Shopify Plus in the growth team. I'm curious, what were some of the lessons you took away from Shopify that you brought over to Wave?
Interesting. So I started at Shopify before I moved to Shopify Plus. So there was a lot of learning I had to carry forward to Shopify Plus in the first place. And Shopify Plus was at that time a super, much smaller team than now. Shopify in itself was a much different company than it is today, all the way from stock prices. But Shopify, the learnings from Shopify was interesting. So it was more around, it was an approach that, so when I got hired in the growth team, I worked for Bruno Ralden, his VP growth. And his approach to managing was very relaxed and phenomenal. I have great respect for him, and you know, he's just amazing. So his idea was go figure, just go hunt for opportunities, and then find your own projects. You need to find where growth opportunities lie for Shopify, and then double down on that. So a big part of my job was not on the how; it's about what do I even do at Shopify, like, you know. So that was a starting point. So with that, it's really hard to point out specific learnings or specific functional learnings or technical learnings, but I would say there's a lot of mental models that I carried forward. Actually, like having worked at Shopify, I feel that's like a way of life for me forever. Shopify does things in a certain way, and that's become my go-to approach for most things. Like, for instance, when I bring this up at Wave, people, we make fun of it internally, but Shopify believes in this idea of 10x. And 10x is real. And Shopify believed in it, and they made it possible, and it's a reality. Shopify 10x's, period. And that's the mentality that I carried forward to Wave. And Wave, I see very, very similar opportunities. Like Shopify believes that anything could be monetized. Like the way we would go scouting for opportunities was just crazy. Like giving you an example, we would look for what people searched on their knowledge base, and then build SEO pages for that. And we would build actual business opportunities based on that. I remember once we found opportunities around people searching for the word domains inside the product, like on in-app search. And then we started selling domains someday. So they truly believe anything could be monetized. As much as, they're a kind bunch, but they're very aggressive when it comes to monetization. And also, like, the biggest learning is good growth is all about retention. And Bruno always has indexed on a very simple mental model, especially for someone who's like building out the function, building out the team, here to prove value, etc. His model was, so I was once really struggling on how do I prioritize projects? How do I work on, like, how do I even pick projects? There's so many opportunities. Where do I start? What do I go with? So his idea was, and he applies that to much larger context as well. And I do that here at Wave. He thinks about everything in the framework of low dependency and high dependency. So his recommendation is at one point in time, you should always have low and high dependency projects. At all points in time, you should have low and high dependency projects. And the split should be 70% of your time, your team's time, your energy should go into low dependency projects and 30% into high dependency projects. Because that keeps the pace alive, that keeps you running fast, that keeps the team's morale up, that helps you see quick results, quick wins or quick failures that you can learn from. So the low dependency really accelerates things. And I think, and the last thing I would say is the data-drivenness, not that I didn't have it before, but truly like showing the value of data and how that could be used as a lever.
For Wave, were you the first growth person to hire essentially? And then speaking of that, how did that role get developed by the leadership team? You really talked about how a lot of growth teams fail because, you know, executive hired this growth guy who's going to do magical things and make the magic, but they actually have a misconception about growth. But can you talk a little bit about that? How you became the director of growth at Wave?
The great question. I mean, you kind of packed a lot of things in there. So let me unpack a few of them. I was at Shopify. I was, for a while and we'll get to that in a bit, but in general, like I was, growth already had a few versions of the growth team. So, you know, growth as an idea wasn't new to to Wave. So think about growth. So growth could exist in two different models in a tech company. You could have a functional model or you could have an independent model. A functional model is something that's headed by the head of a function. Example, a growth team could be headed by a VP marketing or a VP product. Depending on who heads growth in a functional model, you're going to see the lineup of projects aligned to that specific function. Like when a VP marketing heads growth, you're going to see a whole bunch of acquisition projects. And if a VP product heads growth, you're going to see a lot of in-app experiments, et cetera. You know, the challenge with the functional model has always been, you know, how do you balance like growth initiatives versus non-growth initiatives, right? And that's a big challenge. It's not one has to run really fast. One has to just be a lot more balanced and steady thinking, long-term thinking, et cetera. So how do you balance that, right? There are some very successful companies that go with the functional model. Especially when you've hit like product market fit, it totally makes sense. Like and like to a deep level, you totally should be a functional model. And then there's this independent model where, as the name suggests, it's truly independent. Like you don't like the head of growth, or it reports into someone in the exec team. And they have their own mandate, truly accountable for certain specific metrics. And projects could vary from all the way from acquisition to activation to even like retention. Box is an example there, like for retention specifically. But So Wave had a few versions of functional models. And then Paul Marshall, the COO of Wave, he reached out to me. We worked together in the past at in my previous one of my previous jobs. He reached out to me asking, you know, this is an idea that I'm floating around. I feel there's a need for an independent growth. He didn't put it in this in these models, but like his idea was he had a vision for a growth team driving certain aspects of the business and being truly accountable for certain monetization metrics, which is not something that was coming to fruition through the existing product or the marketing teams. So he asked me if this is something that I want to jump on. And, you know, I had nothing, I had everything going for me at Shopify. Like there was nothing that I love Shopify. But it was also, there were three reasons why I took up Wave. One is the market in which we operate, like the payment space, how hot and exciting it is. And then where Wave is, and how Wave is positioned to actually like not just even like be in the space, but actually lead the space. There's so many unique advantages that we have that most companies don't. And the way we are positioned to actually win in that market, that was big. And the third reason was truly like, Paul Marshall. And also when I met the rest of the executive team, my initial observation, and that still stands true even today, was I've not come across an E-team that whose EQ is at this level. So this team truly, truly cares. So yeah, like these three factors, mainly like that was the driving force. Say if there was another company that had the first two advantages as Wave, and if there was no E-team that's equivalent to what our E-team is, I probably would have not taken it up. So in the independent model, I was the first growth person, and then I had to like build the function up from the ground.
That's really fascinating. You talked about EQ, and when we chatted, you said how a lot of growth teams fail because they fail to manage up to the executive team. What does that look like at Wave? How now that you're hired, how did you make sure that that Paul and the rest of the executive team actually know what you're doing and here's your plan? Like let's talk a little bit about that managing upstream piece.
Yeah, I think that's the that's a big piece of whether growth is going to be successful in a business or not. First you need a E-team that has a vision for this team. So meaning you can't operate with constantly be operating with a sense of doubt that if the E-team even trusts what this growth as a function is, right? That's one. And so which means the E-team definitely needs a vision. And moving on, and that alone gives you the buy-in for a lot of things. And the aspect that you as a growth lead, a growth leader, has to manage really well is bring about some predictability to the whole process, right? We all know growth is all about experimentation and all that at a tactical level, but we are not an R&D team, right? Like we are not like a research lab that sits within a pharma company, right? Like you need to show results, and you need to show results in a predictable way. How you establish that predictability for the E-team, that gives them a lot of comfort in trusting this E-team, this growth team even more. I think the bottom line is you need to work the growth as a function does well in companies where the E-team already has a vision and the buy-in. However, that's not the only two criteria. It also matters for the growth, for the growth team to set the right expectations, manage the right expectations, and bring in predictability to the process.
You talked about predictability. What does that look like at Wave? Like, how do you make sure that, you know, you're making sure that stuff that you're presenting up to Paul, it's something that he expects, or something that it's predictable?
Predictability comes in two ways. One is the metric accountability. And then the second is the process of getting there, right? The process involves how we collaborate. What is our interaction model with the rest of the org? What is the interaction model even within the team? How do we manage, projects? Some are going to be in discovery. Some are going to be in flight, in motion. So you're going to have... there's a huge project management component to that, but also it's also like the process also involves the cross team collaboration, right? How do you work with DG? How do you work with the product organization? How do you work with data? How do you work with engineering, for instance? So these are all big friction points, which you could potentially turn into points of delight and opportunities, and the more you attack that, the more you work on that, along with working on having a proper, predictable, accountable metric. I think that alone brings about the kind of comfort that the team would require.
You talked a lot, quite a bit about that metric. What do you own revenue goals? Like, what is that metric that you're accountable to the Wave executive team?
Yeah, good question. So at Wave, the growth team owns the onboarding, and onboarding the length and breadth of onboarding is it's vast and deep. So what we are accountable for is the activation. And within Wave, I don't know if I was influenced by something I read or I just made it up, I'm not sure. We call it FAE, first activation event. And that's what we are accountable for as a growth team.
When we come back in a moment, Vivek explains why the first aha moment is not enough to determine if a user is activated. Just a quick thanks to our sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. They are our RevOps and demand generation shop, and they help B2B SaaS businesses streamline operations, implement new tech stack, and design ABM and demand generation strategies. Now they help you create a predictable revenue pipeline. Their past clients include OnFleet, HubDoc, GuestLogix, FlexDay, and more. You can book a free consultation at 42.agency/GMT. That's FourtyTwo.agency/GMT. And I know that my friend there, Camille, he is the founder of that agency. He knows what he's doing. So shout out to him. Go check it out. The link is in the description of this show. I also want to remind you that you can download the free growth cheat sheet, which with all the actionable tips from this episode in a one-page PDF. Why take notes when you can just take mine? Go to growthtoday.fm/99 to get it now, or find that link in the description. Enough about this. Let's jump back into my chat with Vivek. Let's talk about that, because activation is such, there's so much misconception about that. People say, oh, just get them to the aha moment and they're activated. In our conversation, you say that that's wrong. Essentially, what is FAE, and why is the aha moment not enough to define somebody as activated?
I mean, FAE is going to be an aha moment of sort, but that need not be the first aha moment for the user. Mm-hmm. There could be a string of aha moments leading up to FAE. End of the day, that's the job, right? So when you go back to like what even onboarding is supposed to do, the mission is to identify, mission of onboarding is to identify valuable customers upfront, guide them to value faster, and set them up for success, right? When you think about, so when I got started on onboarding, the questions I had in my head were, what is, you know, we all agree that growth should own onboarding, and now growth will work on onboarding. 2 months later, how do I know that we have improved onboarding? How do I know that, how do I believe myself, and also how do I communicate to the rest of the org that, hey guys, you know what, we've actually improved onboarding, right? And that's what activation is, right? And this is where activation comes in. Like, and that's a very, this is not a novel, new concept. All companies just work this way, but the way we think about activation is it's a retention lever. And it has to be very rooted in engagement. It has to be engagement focused. And it has to be time bound. And also clearly indicate that a business process is in the forming. So if an activation event kind of encompasses all of these things, it being a retention lever, it being super rooted in engagement, and it's time bound, and indicates that a process is forming, like for our users, or habit is getting formed, and there's evidences of that, and yeah, a combination of all of these things make up for a first activation event. Does that sound too complex?
No. What is that exactly? You know, maybe you can't go into the specific details.
I can give you some examples.
Okay, yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
So when think about, for instance, Zoom or Trello. So Zoom, from, I'm not sure if they still have that word now. It's a different world. So I'm sure the metrics are all out of the whack right now. So I don't know if they still have that. So let's stick with Trello for a minute. So Trello had this activation metric as 4 in 28. They called it 4 in 28. What that meant was 4 pieces of content created within 28 days. What that means is a user that goes through that path, a user that they sign up that creates 4 pieces of content within 28 days, is going to retain much, much, much better than someone who does not go through that path. What that means is, you, as Trello user, you're going to have collaborators, you're going to have consumers of the Trello cards, right? For instance, my team creates the Trello cards and I review them, right? Which means I'm not creating content, I'm just being a consumer of that content. That's not what they count as 4 in 28. So you need to have 4 pieces of content created, right? And that matters for them. So does that mean all of Trello's paying customers are going to be 4 in 28? Absolutely not. But the ones that go through that are going to have, when you look at a retention curve over like 12 months or 2 years, and the lifetime value, it's going to be much, much, much larger than what it is for someone who does not go through that path. So the job of the activation team or the onboarding team is to figure out how do we organically get users to 4 in 28. That way we have similar metrics for each line of business. So, you know, Wave has multiple lines. Wave is fascinating that way. Wave has multiple lines of businesses. We have invoicing, Slack payments, yeah. And then we have accounting, we have payroll. So each line of business or each product has its own FAE.
Are they all kind of tied together? You're trying to like cross sell the products. Like, for example, you know, I sign up for invoicing and you're trying to sell me on the payments because that's how I become a paid customer. So is the FAE for invoicing kind of somewhat related to the FAE for payments?
It's a good question. Great question. It's a question that came up internally a lot. So invoicing and payments, I look at them together, because it's not even an upgrade situation. It's a natural path. It's part of your flow, right? You send an invoice and you want to collect payments on that invoice. And the right way to do, and that's actually closing the loop on a transaction, right? And that's how a business owner generates value, financial value for their own business. So not like keeping payments as just because we built it out as a separate product, it doesn't have to be looked at that way from a metric perspective. So our way of invoicing and payments have a unified FAE, yes.
In terms of figuring out that FAE for the thing, you know, last time we chatted, you showed me, you know, you looked at retention curves and you looked at correlation. How did you figure that? How can, you know, if you had an advice for people, I need to figure out what is my first activation event for my users? How can they do that?
I don't know. I don't know. This was 2 months of work.
2 months of work. Wow.
Long story short, but let me try. I would encourage people to come and talk to me.
Do it.
That would be a lot easier, simpler answer. But it goes back to the idea of who are you serving? Who's your ideal customer profile? What does that look like? And then like you need to model them after your most successful customers, who are going to be rooted in to consider them the most retained customers, right? And that truly matters. So you got to build out your FAE, derive your FAE based off of who your retained customers, right? Because all you're doing is if activation is a retention lever, then you need to model activation after retention. So I would say the starting point is who retains the most is should be the first question that you're asking. And within that, you're going to have like segment level retention, et cetera. So yeah, pick a segment, pick a target, see who retains the most, and then work backwards to activation. And there's going to be a lot of qualitative and quantitative exercises that you need to go through. Quantitative exercises will involve a lot of, or some level of statistical analysis, correlation, et cetera. And then your qualitative would actually involve talking to customers, deep discovery overall.
That makes sense. So, you know, you're working on figuring out this FAE for 2 months. How did you get the rest of the teams bought in and the executive team? Now that you're like, oh, guys, we need to focus all of our energy, even the demand gen on this concept. Did they buy in really quickly, or did you have to, you know, really sell the idea?
It wasn't a lot of upsell, really. Like, it wasn't a uphill climb. It was pretty straightforward. Again, like, this is where predictability comes in. The process was laid out up front, and we're actually making ourselves accountable for a metric that's much deeper in the product, much deeper in user behavior, much deeper in engagement. And we're also making demand gen at many levels accountable for that. We're doing the right thing is something that the team always understood. And that already provided a whole bunch of trust. With that, the buy-in was more around the thing that needed explaining or evangelizing across the org was, okay, this looks like a cool model. How do you operationalize this? Like, who is going to own what? Then now that onboarding owns FAE, what should the product team start thinking about? What should they be focused on? And how should the work of demand gen acquisition change? Based off of this, right? So it was a cultural change that just happened at Wave, and I'm so blessed to have amazing partner in DG, for instance, and also on the product side. I felt it was more around how do we operationalize this framework of FAE rather than is FAE good or not.
Can you talk a little bit about that? How has like demand gen work changed, and how has the product team work changed now that they've embraced this FAE framework?
Like I said, I have a great partner in demand gen, Sarah. Yeah, she was on the show. She's great.
She, yeah.
Yeah. It was more like a decision that there was no selling there. You know, the moment I presented this to her and the team, like they felt like, oh yeah, totally makes sense. So it actually gave them a lot of relief that they are now held accountable for not just like any random sign up, but like something that's super deep rooted in the product, something deep rooted in the user behavior. And that gave them a lot of comfort that they're optimizing for the right things. I mean, they may have to change a lot of tactics, right? They need to change a lot of measurement frameworks. They need to switch up a lot of campaigns. They need to rethink a lot of their strategies over. But because it was the right thing to do, I think that was an easy buy-in, right? Like, so we talked about, again, like this is something that I really wanted to call out. We talked about like misconceptions around growth, right? Most DG teams are not even partially accountable for activation. Yeah, they're not. So, you know, which means retention is not something that most acquisition teams get. And you keep creating a lot of top of the funnel, and then that funnel keeps leaking as you go down, right? And that's a common scene here, right? And this is why product-led is becoming a thing, and this is why it becomes more important to keep DG teams accountable for, at least partially accountable for activation. So yeah, like I feel when you look, go back and look at the amount of the dollar, I used to lead DG teams before moving here, and you know, one of the challenges or frustrations I had then was why we're spending a lot of money to acquire 60% of good users or 50% of good users and remaining absolute garbage, and that's a problem, right? Like you look at like the resources being wasted in there, and not taking a deeper look into your activation and retention and how, you know, the users you acquire, how they use the product, not being considered in even how you acquire. Thankfully at Wave, I said, it works out really well. We don't have that challenge because I think there's clear agreement. Now this what this framework established was clear accountability across DG creates not just signups, but qualified signups, right? And then onboarding team, the growth team is responsible for FAEs, meaning the signups that come through is our job to activate them more, right? And then the product teams, from there on, we in a month, we create these many activated users. How many of them will end up being adopted or successful over the next 6 months? So just because you created an FAE doesn't mean there's no drop-off post-FAE. You still are going to see drop-off. There's still huge opportunities of optimization and monetization post-FAE. And especially in an ecosystem like situation at Wave, where you could cross-sell so many more products and, you know, unbundle a lot more products. It's super interesting.
I like how that kind of covers the whole funnel, essentially, those three teams, right? Like you got that kind of divvied up really nicely.
Yeah, it works out really well. Like there's clear metric accountability for each team. When we are in a meeting, we clearly know, you know, who's responsible for what and who has the right takeaways, and yeah, et cetera.
How often do you guys meet? I'm curious, like, do you guys meet on a weekly basis to review the metrics or a monthly basis?
As often as like every week, I guess. We don't review the framework every week, obviously, but, you know, metrics get looked at all the time. I don't think there's a time and place for that. I'm struggling to answer this question.
I want to talk about your onboarding experience in ShiftGear, talking about that. I got to say, it's, you know, it's obviously well thought out. It's probably one of the best onboarding experiences I've seen and gone through. Can you talk a little bit about how that came together? You talked about how, you know, there was a product team that worked on it before, but there's a lot of changes that has happened. What kind of changes and experiments have you kind of implemented and taken on to to the live onboarding experience now?
There's been a lot of changes. First of all, thank you that you know my team would be very happy to hear that you found our onboarding one of the better ones. There's a lot more work to do for us, but it's kind of significantly different from there's been a significant change compared to 8-9 months ago. So now there's clear delineation of which product that a user has come to use. What is their immediate need? So there's a big difference here. Like, immediate need may not be your long-term need. Your needs change. But when you think about how we acquire customers, we don't acquire customers for a financial system of record, right? We don't have a keyword that says, here's your financial system of record. People who search for a financial system of record should find Wave. That's not how we go to market, right? We go to market by each product. We go to market, we acquire users for invoicing, we acquire users for payroll, we acquire users for accounting, right? And when that's happening at the acquisition level, that needs to happen in onboarding too, which is you need to clearly delineate who's come to do what. And then that's the first step. That's an area where we saw in the earlier model a lot of muddiness. We waited for the users to take their first few actions to figure out, oh, this is what they've come to do, versus even like delineating what is that there, why are they here?
I want to kind of dig into that, because this is the one thing that I really loved about the onboarding experience is the second step to the process, to the onboarding sign up process. You ask the question, you know, what did you sign up for Wave? You know, you have the option, send professional invoices, manager, accounting, run effortless payroll. And then I actually signed up 4 times to check, you know, this is what it looks like. And you sent me to a different experience to the product, and also send me different emails based on what I chose, which is like, yes, this is how it should be done. I get it. Like, for people who might not understand, why is this so important to like you said, delineate the reason why people sign up right at like upfront as soon as you can, because especially at the user onboarding experience.
Yeah, it's you totally skewed our metrics. You signed up 4 times.
Sorry, I apologize. I knew I was going to do that, but I was really curious.
I'm joking. So we are a free product for the most part. So you can do whatever you want. Just use our invoicing and payments product. I would be very thankful. But to answer the question, I think it just goes back to, this is where acquisition like DG and growth needs to work really closely together. If DG is going to market in a certain way, if DG is actually acquiring customers, you know, in a certain way, that needs to reflect in the onboarding. That's number one. We cannot have two different approaches to this. And if that's one. And the next is, you know, I talked about immediate need versus long-term need, right? What we've understood was one of the learnings that actually drove us to take that approach of delineating users by product upfront. Users that come to Wave generally tend to gain trust on one product and then start navigating into the next one. So, and when users go to their next product, meaning when our users use more than one of our Wave products, they get a lot more value from Wave than they normally would. And we get a lot more value from them, when they were just in a situation where they're just using one product. So while that is true, meaning there's a life cycle ecosystem effect that's there, the key thing to consider is, do they come in with all these bundle of needs, cluster of needs in their head? They don't, right? And that the immediate need is, which is the product that they need to use where they can solve the most immediate pain, and then start moving around, then start branching out within Wave, right? And understanding that was very important. And just the function of you having to use different products means, like for instance, like to your point where the second screen asked, depending on which product you chose to work in, we ask very different questions. That's because each product has its own need, right? When you're using invoicing, you come to do invoicing. And that means we need to know a little more about your invoicing behavior, your business process around invoicing. And that could be different from your payroll needs. That could be different from an accounting need. So it was very important that it's just, I would say, more logical an approach rather than it being too scientific. It just, users come here looking for, looking to solve a pain point. And we cannot solve the pain point if we don't know enough about them. And here, there's a situation where the pain point could vary depending on which product you choose. Therefore, what we learn about you will also change. That's it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I hope that's something that a lot more product does is, you know, I love how you answered that. You really focus on the pain point of the user, you know, instead of like, oh, we can customize this experience. Now we can help them a little bit better. The other thing I really loved is when I started going through the process, I uploaded my logo and right away I saw what my invoice would look like with Wave, which is like, oh, that's actually much better looking than what I'm sending right now. You know, can you talk a little bit about how that validate? When we chatted earlier, you said that was there before, but you were talking about validating if that's still needed to help people get to that FAE moment. But yeah.
Yeah. So interesting. So interesting. You called that out. We talked about it earlier too. So I think, I can't take, like me or my team cannot take credit for, you know, that specific piece in the workflow. It was already there. And you know, the product team has put in a lot of thought in there. The only thing we did was there were a lot of questions around how is it actually helping, right? Like providing that visual reminder or like a visual assurance, how does that even help? So should it be in the flow or should it not be in the flow? Right, in your path to FAE, should it even be there or not? Because this is whether you did this or not, you could still be an FAE. Right, you could still get to the point of FAE. And here's the thing about metrics, right, and data in general. The data will inform you a lot about the what and the how. Right, the data is not going to tell you why. So this is a piece that we validated by actually talking to a whole bunch of customers during our deep dive and customer discovery, where, you know, think about who we are working with. Small businesses. Some of them don't even have an actual website, right? But they still work with a lot of their customers, a lot of customers, and they want to look professional, right? Actually, even providing this visual assurance makes them look, they didn't come looking for, oh, am I going to look that professional? In their mind, they want to send out an invoice. But when they actually see it happen, is that what my customer is going to see? Wow, this is great. Like this makes, you know, looks very professional. It's beautiful. Also, it's very professional. That gives them a lot of confidence that this is a good product, first of all, something that I can trust and go with. So it's more of a point of delight, an aha moment. Yeah, it's got nothing to do with the metric itself. Again, like these are things where you need to dive deep to understand. Metrics is very one-dimensional. You need to consider all other dimensions.
Oh, that's great. Totally. I had that aha moment too when I saw that. It's like, I also love how you picked out the brand color right from the logo. Like I didn't have to, you know, like, oh, what's your hex code for your brand color? No, I didn't need to plug in any of that. I just picked it up right away. I love that piece. The other thing that I noticed is I actually signed up for Wave for my podcast for my sponsors now, so that I switch over all my invoicing to Wave. that was a couple of months ago. And, you know, yesterday I signed up again using to check it out, to check out the onboarding. And I noticed some things changed. I was like, oh, this is new, right? Like, there was a 4-step process when I was signed up for invoicing. And then there was, congrats, you've set up your invoicing, put in your email. You know, what I'm curious what brought about this change. Instead of like, I remember dropping them, people just dropping them in into like a get started page or something like that. Now there's a clear step process to actually getting people before they get into the actual product.
Yeah, I think the again, like, I don't want to get into too much of tactics here, but the idea is, you know, what you experience is actually a live experiment. We right now are running, have been running an experiment for a long time now. What you've experienced is an experiment in itself. That said, not all users, so users like guidance. Guidance is a big part of onboarding philosophies, right? Like, guidance is a key principle, a core principle of onboarding in general. But does that work with everyone? Probably not. Probably does. Who knows, right? This is why we experiment. So we ran an experiment initially. I can't remember, maybe late last year or early this year. With all these all the users going through a guided path, you know, this level of guidance where here's your step one, here's your step two, here's your step three and four, five, right? When I put you through a list of steps, you naturally are going to take those steps. You're going to see fewer people dropping off, right? The interesting thing is, not everyone needs this level of guidance. And in fact, there are some users, some segment of users who are going to want to explore more before they go down a guided path. Right? So as part of experimentation, we've learned that guidance does not work for everyone. And we've scaled back guidance for a certain set of users. And what you've experienced is, someone who wants guidance. So there's a way that we identify whether you want guidance or not, and then we put you through that.
I might be getting into the weeds here, but I'm really curious how you figure out who wants a guidance or not. Is that, you know, based on how quickly they answer the questions, or like how do you figure that piece out, whether they want more guidance or not?
Depending on how you answer those questions.
Oh, okay, all right. It's good to know. The last question I'm curious about is, once somebody's like actively using one of your products, let's say invoicing or payments, how do you get them to like adopt the other products? I'm guessing that's more of the product team now, where they're actively trying to increase the average revenue per user in that piece.
So the product teams go deeper, the growth team goes wider, right? And that's a good model, mental model to think, you know, go with. The product teams think about have a long-term view of the customer, long-term view of the user base, and so they build features, functionalities that serve users long-term. So for them to continue retained past FAE in that product, that's where the product teams put a lot of focus. The cross-product movement and upselling and cross-selling comes under this unit called lifecycle, which growth owns, like it's still under. So right now we haven't made a lot of progress there, and it's still in the very early phases. But we already see a very strong organic behavior that exists. Like, our baseline is super strong on users, like I said, like trusting one product and moving on to the next one. What we need to do is, how do we accentuate the organic path that already exists? And what matters to them in that path, and who it matters to, et cetera. Those are pieces that we are working on right now. But the larger monetization, like cross-product monetization, things like that, comes under lifecycle, as I'm sure Fareed from, you know, the former Slack, he talks about that a lot, but yeah. similar to that.
Interesting. That's good to know. I might have to get you on the podcast a year from now to talk about life cycle. Once you run more stuff on that, I'm sure you'll probably find another, like invent another framework for that piece. I want to start wrapping.
Frameworks give the team you work with, the cross functional teams, and also the exec teams, a lot of comfort.
I know
you. These frameworks are just guiding tools.
That's totally true. I want to start wrapping up and ask this one question I love asking. You know, if you had one or two pieces of advice for growth teams, what would be that piece of advice? Maybe in a similar situation where whether that's their executive team supports them or not, like what would be those two pieces of advice?
Yeah. So I have a long way to go before I give advice. So I'm not going to say anything new that say Fareed or Casey Winners or Jeff Chang, Sean Close kind of guys haven't said I'm not going to say I'm not going to break any paths here on especially on advice. There's enough and more on the internet, so. But I'm just going to remind people of some basics, which would be around focus on retention and manage your expectations well up, like especially upstream. Set clear expectations and manage them really well, especially with the team that manages you. And don't focus too much on like the what and the how, but spend a lot of time on why. Why this exists? Why are we meshing this? So I have a friend at Wave. I'm sure you probably know him, David Axler. He heads our payroll and invoicing payments lines of businesses. He once said, "A good leader. The difference between a good leader and a good manager is a manager optimizes for the metrics given to them." A leader creates their own metrics. So, and that stuck with me. And I feel, when you focus more on why we are doing certain things, you may not even feel compelled to optimize for the metrics that the world has given you. You will start creating your own frameworks and metrics that you will want to actually build for, because that's the right thing for the business. That's the right thing for your users. So focus on that a lot more. And if anything, like this question, I would kind of pivot this question to more around what is the advice for the executive teams who are looking at installing or running, managing growth teams? Let's just level set on the idea that acquisition is only a piece of growth. Let's just not over-index on performance marketing and acquisition related growth activities and settle down there, right? There's a lot of wastage that happens down funnel. Let's focus on that. Let's focus on retention. Let's focus on users that there's no point in having so many top of the funnel users and then not having a sliver of them at the very bottom of the funnel, right? The exec teams need to expand their scope of thinking around that thought, which is the whole idea and the premise of product-led, I guess. But I just want to reinstate that here.
No, those are good points that people need to think about. One final question is, people wanted to reach out, ask more questions from you. Where can they find you online?
LinkedIn, most active. I'm a lot active on LinkedIn. Not hard to find me on LinkedIn. And Vivek@waveapps.com is my email. And also, not super active on Twitter, but sure, Twitter too.
I'll link it all, man. I'll link your LinkedIn and your Twitter if you want to promote that.
So I'm more than happy to take questions and have discussions.
And if people want to find out more about Wave, they're like looking for invoicing, where can people find that?
Waveapps.com. It's super easy to sign up and play around with and start testing the product and just go for it. I would totally, totally recommend Wave.
Yeah, same here. I use Wave too. So I would 100% recommend Wave. Well, thank you so much for your time, Vivek. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Ramli. Thanks. My pleasure here.
Well, that was it for this episode. Oh man, this is one of my longest episode. I really love it that Vivek went into details what that first activation event is and why it's so important and how it's related to retention. With all these tips and advice that Vivek provided in this episode, you can actually download all of those tips in a one-page PDF that I put together in something I call a growth cheat sheet. Why take notes when you can just download mine? Yeah, you don't have to listen back and like, what did Vivek say in this part and that part? How can I apply this to my business? No, just download this PDF, which you can take which tips are applicable to your business and apply it right away to see amazing growth. You can download this right now, growthtoday.fm/99, or you find that link in the description. Now, before I end, I just want to thank the sponsor for this episode, 42 Agency. They are a RevOps and demand generation shop. You can check them out at 42.agency/GMT. That's FourtyTwo.agency/GMT for a free consultation. And you can also find that link in the description of the show. And if you're interested about getting an ad-free version of this podcast, you can go to patreon.com/growthtoday to sponsor this podcast for as little as $2 per episode. Well, that's it for this episode. Until the next one, this is your host, Ramli John. Keep safe. And as always, keep on growing.